have $700 goal for this program and keep KBOO going strong. 877-500-5266.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by The Higher Taste, a local food company making ready-to-eat, vegan, and vegetarian fare since 1987. Their products are available at most local grocery stores. A menu and locator can be found at thehighertaste.com. Lunch was provided by Frank's Noodle House, with two locations in Northeast Portland and Beaverton. Specializing in hand-pulled noodles, Frank's Noodle House serves a wide variety of Chinese noodles. Open Monday to Saturday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. and 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. Dinner was provided by Bombay Chaat House, located in downtown Portland at 804 Southwest 12th Avenue. Bombay Chaat House, also known as Indian Chaat House, is one of Portland's destinations for authentic Indian food. Open every day but Sunday, from breakfast to dinner. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm/give right now.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's a special between the covers for the spring drive. KBOO's own youth collective will be interviewing Alex Gino, author of You Don't Know Everything. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located on East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Grendel's Coffee House is open daily until 6 p.m. More information on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550. That's 503-595-9550.
Author Alex Gino has written two young adult books, George and You Don't Know Everything, Jilly P. Virgil and Andrew of the KBOO Youth Collective interviewed Alex Gino before they came to Portland at the beginning of April. Here's Virgil introducing Alex.
This is Virgil, and you're listening to the KBOO Youth Collective. Next up, we have an interview with Alex Gino, author of George and You Don't Know Everything, Jilly P, who loves glitter, ice cream, gardening, awful puns, and stories that reflect the diversity and complexity of being alive. Welcome, Alex.
Hi there.
How did you get into writing?
I've always been a writer. I pretty much wrote from before I could really write, and my parents would write it down. But it wasn't until really about 5 years ago when I got my first contract that I figured out that it could be my job. So it had been something that I had always been doing on the sideline, because if you're creative, for a lot of us, it just sort of happens. You don't choose whether you do it. But it's only recently that it can be the focus of my life, and it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Can you tell us about your first book, George, and the amazing response it got?
Sure. Well, thank you for calling it an amazing response. So my first book is about a trans girl whose name is Melissa, even though the cover, you know, calls her George, and she is in fourth grade, and no one knows that she's trans at the beginning of the book, and she wants to play Charlotte in her school's play of Charlotte's Web. And to her, that's her way of starting to show the world who she is. And it's a story about friendship, and it's a story about being who you are.
Can you tell us some stories that you heard from readers about how it helped or changed them?
Oh, sure. And you said you did ask about the response. The response has been so much larger and more positive than I could have imagined. When I started writing the book in 2005, I couldn't imagine that it would be out in the world in the way that it is now. One of my favorite stories comes from a person who was probably in their late teens, early 20s, so older than my readership, came up to me in an event, and she said, you know, I met you through the American Library Association. I got an advanced reader copy, and you signed it to my old name. This is the real book now, and in that 6 months, you know, I got to read the story and find out about myself, and would you make this out to me? And she had transitioned in that time in part because she had read a story of someone who transitioned. And that was really sweet.
Wow, yeah. What is your favorite part about that book?
My favorite part about the book is that I don't have to work on it anymore, because I was writing it for about 12 years. But the germ of the book, where I started from, is the very last scene. And I will spoiler enough to say that it is a hopeful scene. And it is a scene of friendship. And So that's my favorite part. And then the rest of the book became how to get these two characters to that place where they could really see each other.
Melissa, people know her as George, but she's Melissa, wants to be Charlotte in her school play of Charlotte's Web, But You Be White. And it's time for the auditions. So let's hear her audition. Midgetel asked the boys who wished to audition to raise their hands. George joined them, lifting her hand just to the height of her head. Midgetel counted 6 blue index cards, shuffled them, and passed them out, along with 6 fresh copies of the practice part. George was number 6, last, the longest to possibly wait until her audition, with Wilbur staring up at her in bold, thick letters. George slumped in her chair and turned the page over. Ms. Udell then distributed 9 pink cards to girls who raised outstretched fingers and mouthed numbers to each other. "Yes!" exclaimed Kelly, who waved 2 fingers in the air at George like a victory sign. Janelle stood, waving a card with number 1 on it. She held the door open for Ms. Udell, who pushed her chair into the hallway, where they both disappeared. George listened closely, but she couldn't hear a sound from the hallway over the murmurs and rustling papers inside the classroom. George tried to bury her mind in her homework. Monday's night homework always took forever because the spelling words were also vocabulary words, and Ms. Udell insisted that each student write an official dictionary definition of each word before using it in a sentence. With Mrs. Field's permission, George headed to the back of the room. By the time George was back in her chair, Janelle popped her head in through the doorway. Kelly bounded up and rushed out the door. Soon, she came beaming back into the classroom and announced with great flourish, "Number 3, you're up." Kelly gave George a thumbs-up sign and hunched over in her seat. A few minutes later, on her way to pick up a dictionary from the back of the room, she dropped a note on George's desk. It was folded into a small square. When George opened it, the fold formed a grid across the page. The note read, "Charlotte, you'll be R-A-D-I-A-N-T, Kelly." George couldn't help but grin. Radiant was one of the words Charlotte had woven into her web to save Wilbur, and it had been one of their vocabulary words last week. It meant beaming and sparkling, and George couldn't think of a finer compliment. She took a break from her homework to recite her lines silently. She remembered them all and knew just when to pause to give the words their best effect. Maddie looked pale when she left the room and even paler when she came back. Emma clenched her lines tightly. Maybe if the girls were terrible enough, Ms. Udell would be so relieved that George was good that she wouldn't care that George wasn't a girl. At least not a regular girl. There was a long wait after the last girl came back into the room as Ms. Udell listened to the students from Mr. Jackson's class. Eventually, Ms. Udell came in to announce that it was time for the boys to take their turns. Robert was first and came back bragging, "Beat that, number 2. But George wasn't worried about the boys. Her competition was already back in their seats writing definitions for words like gesture and narrator. Finally, the 5th boy, Chris, went out into the hallway. He was a chubby white kid with a toothy grin. He returned with a smile wider than ever and danced victoriously back to his seat. Then it was George's turn. "You don't have your sheet, George," Ms. Udell said. "Don't need it." "Well, that's a good sign. It means you must have practiced." Ms. Udell gave a kind smile. "But do speak up." Before Ms. Udell could say anything else, George closed her eyes and began. The first words rushed out of her mouth, but then she slowed into the cadence she had practiced. She felt herself as Charlotte and gave each word her full attention as it left her tongue. The words felt even more like hers than they had in Kelly's room. George reached the end of Charlotte's monologue and was ready for the dialogue with Wilbur that followed, but George didn't hear her cue. She opened her eyes. Ms. Udell was frowning and a thick crease had formed across her forehead. "George, what was that?" she asked. "I," started George, but there were no words to finish the sentence. "I, was that supposed to be some kind of joke? Because it wasn't very funny." "It wasn't a joke. I want to be Charlotte." George's voice sounded much smaller now that she was speaking her own words. You know I very well can't cast you as Charlotte. I have too many girls who want the part. Besides, imagine how confused people would be. Now, if you're interested in being Wilbur, that's a possibility, or maybe Templeton, he's a funny guy. No thanks, I just wanted... Well, okay then, Ms. Udell, eyed George oddly. For now, we need to get into the room to get ready to go. Would you hold the door for me? Ms. Udell pushed her chair back into the classroom, shaking her head. She announced that it was time to pack up and sent George's fro first to the coat closet. George muttered to herself as she loaded her math book into her bag. Stupid, 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 stupid. Stupid body, stupid brain, stupid boys and stupid girls, stupid everything. She kicked at the leg of her desk, knocking it into Emma's chair in front of her. Emma turned back to give George a dirty look. George stared intently at the speckled tiled floor and wished she were home in bed. When Ms. Udell called her row, George hoisted her bag onto her back and shuffled over to the boys' line, still staring at the ground. In the yard, Kelly bounded up to George, her ponytail flopping behind her. So, how did it go? What did she think? Was she impressed or what? I bet she let you be Charlotte. I don't want to talk about it. George scraped her foot against the pavement. What happened? Kelly cried, grabbing George by the shoulders. Did you mess up? Leave me alone. George jerked back and tried to head to her bus. Did she not like it? No, Kelly, she didn't like it. She hated it. She said that? Kelly's eyes were wide. She thought it was a joke. Oh, well, at least you tried, Kelly shrugged. That's what my dad says. Ha! George screamed in Kelly's face. I don't want to hear what your dad says. Kelly's shoulders shrank. She opened and closed her mouth and then headed toward her bus line. George took the steep steps down to her own bus and shuffled along the narrow corridor, her feet sticking to the rubbery floor. She picked an empty seat midway back and hoped no one would take the spot next to her. Hugging her backpack tightly, she buried her head in the dark space between the backpack and her chest and held back her tears.
What led you to write You Don't Know Everything, Jilly P?
So once I had the first book done and Scholastic was like, well, what else do you want to write about? My grandparents were deaf. So I grew up with deaf culture. And I grew up in New York, and I'm white, but I had a whole lot of black friends. And so I've been connected to communities that I'm not part of. And with that comes privilege. And so I've had to learn how to navigate that privilege, and sometimes I do it well, and sometimes I don't, and sometimes I make mistakes. And so in the book, Jilly P is a girl with white hearing privilege, and she has a deaf sister, and she has a black lesbian aunt, and she has a friend who's deaf and black, and she makes mistakes. And so if George is a book about learning to be who you are, Jilly P is a book about seeing other people for who they are.
So you mentioned those characters. Could you summarize the book for us?
So the plot of the book is that Jilly P's white hearing sister is born deaf. And the book is about figuring out, on one hand, what her family is going to do with that. And then parallel, she's recognizing racism in her family and racism in the world, and that it is not a historical notion, it's not an other notion, it's a notion that she actually has to deal with and face. It all comes to a head in an instance of racist police violence that racist and ableist, because there's a deaf black person who is a victim of violence because the police didn't know how to work with her as a black and deaf person. And so it's about learning how to step back and to support other people without centering yourself.
So you obviously got an amazing response for your first book. George, how has the overall response been for this book?
I think that Melissa's story, George, is a really heartwarming story in a lot of ways, and there's a lot of warm fuzzies in it. So lots of people come out of it feeling either validated and seen, or learning whether how to be an alliance, so they feel supportive and sort of an easy book to feel good about. This book is more complicated. This book, not everything does go well, and not everything is easy, and it's about facing the fact that we do make mistakes and we can't not make mistakes. So the response has been positive, but more measured. It's been more like, wow, I had to think about this. And there have been people who have felt confronted by it, just in the way, in the same way that people have felt confronted by my first book, because there are folks who get nervous about talking with real issues with kids.
Will you read an excerpt from the book for us?
Well, I've got a little bit from Jilly P ready here, so I can do that. Should I tell you where we are?
All right, yeah.
So I'm actually halfway through the book, is a piece that I picked. And it is right after Thanksgiving dinner. And some things went down at Thanksgiving dinner that Jilly hadn't really seen in her family before, because she'd been busy being a kid at the kids' table. But she's recognizing that her Uncle Mike in particular said some racist things, and her grandmother said some ignorant but kind of hurtful things, and she's now talking with her Aunt Alicia, who is Black and who has two Black children. So, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Finally, it's Tuesday afternoon, and Macy and I are walking home from school. She's telling me about this annoying kid in her language arts book group and how he tells everyone what to do but doesn't do his own work. We're almost to her house by the time she notices that I've barely said a word. What's up, Jilly? Daydreaming about the cute deaf boy again? Aunt Alicia's going to be at my house when I get home. Oh, right. Macy already knows about Thanksgiving. I hope it's a good talk. Me too. I say goodbye to Macy, and then it's just me mountaineering the last few blocks to my house. When I arrive, Aunt Alicia's Volvo is parked out front, Maya the canary hanging from the rearview mirror. I've been thinking about what I want to say to Aunt Alicia for 5 days, so my brain is already deep in thought mode when I toss my bag on the couch and sit at the kitchen table. He's the worst, I announce. What? No hello? Asks Aunt Alicia. Sorry. Hi. Need a hug? Yes. I get up and let Aunt Alicia squeeze me. Then I give her a kiss on the cheek. She's only a few inches taller than I am, so it's easy to reach. Orange juice, she asks. Yes, please. I know how to get my own juice, but somehow it tastes a little better when Aunt Alicia pours it. So, who's the worst? Aunt Alicia asks, and try to keep it down. I just got your mom to take a nap a few minutes ago. Uncle Mike, I whisper yell. I'm so mad at him, and at Graham, and Mom, and Dad, and everyone for letting him get away with it. She places the glass on the table and sits down next to me. For what it's worth, Jilly Bean, I'm way madder at Uncle Mike than you could ever be. And that's not the first time he said stuff like that. That sucks. It sure does. Once I say how angry I am, I'm a little less angry. I take a sip of orange juice and start thinking a thought I've been having since Thursday. So, can I ask a question? Of course, Jilly Bean. Well, I get that Uncle Mike was telling a messed up story, but I want to know, but I don't want to hurt Aunt Alicia's feelings. She puts her hand on my shoulder. Go ahead. Nothing changes if we don't talk. Well, what was so wrong with Graham asking you to bake a sweet potato pie? I mean, you bake the best pies in the family. Don't tell Mom I said that. Aunt Alicia sighs. And sweet potato pie is twice as good as pumpkin, even when your mom makes it. But that's how a lot of racism goes down these days. Now that white people can't put up signs telling colored people where to sit and stand and live and drink water, she rolls her eyes at the word colored, and it's like her whole head goes along for the ride. It gets more subtle. Subtle how? Low-key, under the radar. But she wasn't meaning to say something racist. Exactly. What Mike did was on purpose. What your Graham did wasn't. It's like the difference between stepping on someone's foot by mistake and kicking them. Only one is mean, but they both hurt. Sometimes you don't have to be trying to hurt someone. You just have to say the wrong thing. Like with profound, which is her deaf black friend. But what if you don't know what the right thing to do is? Then you do the best you can. But what if you make a mistake? Jelly Bean, if I gave up on people when they made mistakes, I'd be lonely. Real lonely. Does Aunt Joanne make mistakes? Lots. The closer you are to a person, the more chances there are to mess up. But we talk about it. And then usually it happens a little differently the next time. But not doing anything? That's a problem. And one that can't get any better because nothing changes. Progress brings some dark times, but it's still better than not growing at all. I wish I had said something at Thanksgiving. You weren't even at the table. I think when the time comes, you'll speak up. I hope so, I say. I'm glad we talked. Me too, Julie Bean. So that's a little bit there, and it turns out that I think that when the time comes, she does speak up.
Thank you. What kind of a reader are you? What's your favorite book?
Ooh, what kind of a reader am I? I love that question. The time that I loved most reading was right when I was around 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, which is the kids that I write for. So my favorite book is probably a tie between The Phantom Tollbooth, which is a kid's book, and The Poetry of Shel Silverstein.
We also love puns. Why are they so great?
Why are puns so great? I feel like I should have a pun answer to that. Like, why are they so great? Because they're cheesy? Grated cheese?
Oh, that was good.
Nice.
I got there. They're a little forced, but I got there.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to anyone listening who wanted to become a writer, as a writer yourself?
I would say write. Right? That's the one that everyone says is write. But I would be cautious of any advice that is extreme. So I've heard advice that says write every day. And for some people, that is absolutely useful in the way to go. And you do need to write regularly if you're going to improve. But if not doing it the way that you're quote-unquote supposed to makes you think you're not doing it, throw that aside. I spent my 20s thinking that I wasn't a real writer because I don't write every day. I write regularly, and now that it's my job, I probably write 5 or 6 days a week. But the thing that you do to be a writer is to write and then show it to people and listen to what they have to say. Sometimes what they have to say is useful because it's good, and sometimes what they have to say is useful because it's really bad advice, so you know to do something else. I will, talk a little bit about writing process, and I will talk a little bit about why I write the kind of books I write for kids, because I do believe that kids need tools to talk about what's going on in the world. But most of it, I'm really excited for the conversation that I can't plan, because what I go in there is I focus on questions and answers. I see so many different groups that if I tried to plan the same speech for everyone, sometimes it would be like way behind the times for whatever area or group I'm with. And sometimes it would be something that wouldn't make sense because it's, quote unquote, coastal, liberal, whatever. And so if I can go there and say, well, what is your community thinking? How is, what are the conversations you are having about gender and about talking with kids about real issues, talking about race, talking about ableism, then we can have just a really genuine conversation, and it tends to be a lot of fun.
Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't ask you about here?
I think you folks really covered a whole lot of stuff. I think that if anything, what I would say is that I know that there have been issues in Oregon about who my book is for, particularly George. And I will say, personally, I appreciate that you didn't bring that up, but I will go ahead and bring that up. And I will say that I do absolutely believe that my book is age appropriate, because I think that it is appropriate to show compassion for people at every age. And I think that not showing people who's in the world doesn't change who children are. Children don't become trans because they read a trans book, but they can be filled with shame if they don't. And the path back from shame and the path back from feeling like you're not real because you've never seen yourself is long and hard. And if we can avoid that for kids, I think that not only can we do that, but we need to do that. Kids deserve that.
Well, thank you so much, Alex, for talking to us. I think that was all of the questions we had written down.
Well, I'm happy to chat with you. It was great.
Yeah, thank you.
That was an interview with Alex Gino, done by Virgil and Andrew of the KBOO Youth Collective. If you're interested in learning more about the Youth Collective, go to kboo.fm/youth or email Aaron Yankee, the KBOO Youth Advocate, at youth@kboo.org. I'm Luna. Thanks for listening.
KBOO Portland, we are in our membership drive, and so it's time for you to call up at 877-500-5266, 877-500-5266. I'm Teresa, your trans sister on the radio, and I want you to join up, and I want you to, well, you have your choices today. We, I believe that we have a book, is that correct, Ani? We don't know. Okay, not necessarily a book. I would like you to call 877-500-5266, 877-500-KBOO, and pledge $10 a month because we would like to give... Oh, we do have a book. Okay, I'll tell you what. We have You Don't Know Everything, Jilly P, available for a $60 pledge. That's only $5 American dollars a month. And you can do it by calling us. You Don't Know Everything, Jilly P, by Alex Gino, and it seems to me that there is more information to this because more pieces of paper.
It is in fact the book that you have been hearing about that the Youth Collective members were interviewing the author about. This is great work, you know, looking at issues of gender and trans issues for the young adult audience. This is amazing stuff, and you are hearing it here on KBOO, your community radio station. Please do give us a call of support right now at 877-500-5266.
Turns out the other information was we have 3 copies of the book.
Absolutely. And so you want to call right now and get one very quickly before we run out, as we did in the last hour during Heather McCoy's interview with Johan Hari. So 877-500-5266. Maybe you have a young person in your life and you want to share this book with them. Maybe you are working with young people and you know that many young people go through a very hard time as they are trying to figure out gender issues. And we know that the acceptance rate and the sort of view of self is really, really hard for a lot of trans teens. So please think about giving this book to somebody working with young people, or maybe you yourself. 877-500-5266 is the number to call to join KBOO, and let us thank you with a copy of You Don't Know Everything, Jilly P. I want to thank a bunch of folks who have been supporting KBOO this morning. It is a wonderful day here at your community radio station because we've heard from many people like Suzanne. Suzanne came in person. Thank you, Suzanne. And Kari. Kari, thank you so much. Increasing your monthly contribution, just like Robert and Tigard. Thank you so much, Kari and Robert, who are also KBOO volunteers, and we thank you. Leah, thank you so much. In Salem, it was great hearing from you this morning, Leah. Thank you so much, Susan and Don and Holly in North Portland. All of these folks have called or come in this morning, and we are now looking to hear from you, my friend, you. It is your time to contribute to KBOO and support independent community radio, 877-500-5266.
3 copies of the book, 2 minutes to get it, 877-500-5266. Actually, it just takes 2 or 3 minutes for you to pick up your phone and grab it out of your pockets, what you do these days, I guess, and dial 877-500-5266. Just a couple, 3 minutes to spend on the phone with us. It gives us a thrill to hear the phone ring. And we fill out a little form, and then we take your $5 a month, which you'll never notice, out of your bank account. And we can do that and just keep it on rolling that way. And you can get your book, 877-500-5266, 877-500-KABU, 877-500-5266.
Or online at kboo.fm. Join us. Join us now. Support community radio. Become a member of KABU, 877-500-5266.
Coming this Friday during KABU's Spring Membership Drive, it's News and Public Affairs Day. From 7 a.m. to 8 p.m.,
KABU will be highlighting the voices of our news and public affairs volunteers. This spring's News and Public Affairs Day will be featuring programs that take a critical look at data mining
and the non-great side of social media and how our lives are increasingly affected by the internet.
That's News and Public Affairs Day this Friday, April 12th from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. only on your community radio station, KABU Portland.
Coming up next, Words and Pictures pays tribute to the 10th anniversary of April being Portland Comic Book Month. KBOO programming is made possible by KABU member listeners and support from Dark Side Cinema, open every night and featuring independent, foreign, and art house films. The Dark Side is located at 215 Southwest 4th Street between Madison and Jefferson Avenues in Corvallis, Oregon. More information and showtimes are available online at darksidecinema.com.
Welcome to a special membership drive edition of Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and today we are celebrating the 10th anniversary of Portland Comic Book Month. And to help us celebrate, we have a jam-packed studio full of movers and shakers from the local comics community. Katie Proctor and Liz Yerby are here, along with Douglas Wolk. Katie is the proprietor of the bookstore and social space Books with Pictures, and Liz is a self-published artist